This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Today's the vernal equinox, and happy spring. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio. And I'd like to introduce my co-host for today, Rebecca Markert. Rebecca is the staff attorney at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and she's very graciously agreed to sub this week for my co-host, Dan Barker, who is winging his way back from Australia. And thanks for giving me some company today, Rebecca. I would have been very lonely in the studio.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and regular listeners will know that FFRF is the nation's largest national association of atheists and agnostics. We've been working to keep state and church separate since 1978, and that's really going to be the topic of today's show in honor of Rebecca's appearance here. We're going to concentrate on timely legal issues relating to that constitutional principle of the separation between church and state. And we're going to talk about some of Rebecca's recent victories and complaints on behalf of members of the public over state church violations.
And on the second half of today's show, we're pleased to announce that we will have Michael Newdow as our guest. Listeners to Free Thought Radio are probably aware that a week ago, Thursday, on March 11th, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals issued a 2-1 ruling against Michael Newdow's challenge of the words "under God" in the school recitation of the Pledge of Allegiance.
And it was a very terrible decision, wasn't it, Rebecca?
Yes.
And it really did read as if it was religious right propaganda, that it was written by the religious right. And it talks about how America was supposedly a nation founded on God and godly principles. But the consolation is an absolutely ripping and passionate 134-page dissent by Judge Stephen Reinhardt. And Judge Reinhardt was one of the judges who originally sided with Michael Newdow back in 2002 when he won a similar case before the Ninth Circuit that eventually got overturned on a technicality. And Judge Reinhardt is like a constitutional knight in shining armor, and he really gives it to the majority panel. We'll be talking about Reinhardt's dissent. We'll be talking about what's wrong with the Ninth Circuit decision in the second half of our show with Michael Newdow. But now it's Rebecca's turn. So, Rebecca, let's turn to your hard work in the past month to keep church and state separate. And you've been very busy.
Yes, we've been very busy at the foundation.
And we're always very busy, aren't we?
Right.
I mean, the legal queries come in huge chunks at a time, don't they?
Yes, they do.
So let's talk about the foundation's latest victory, and congratulations, by the way, and what's that one about?
Thank you. The latest victory is in Roswell, Georgia. There, the city council was considering instituting prayer at their regular meetings. One of the council members, Councilwoman Betty Price, proposed the idea in early February to start prayer at the meetings. The idea was to invite local clergy members to come in and give an invocation. And if the scheduled pastor wasn't able to come in and give an invocation, then the council members would substitute one of their own. After receiving a complaint from a local resident, we sent a letter to the council urging them to reject this proposal. The letter said that prayer at government meetings is unnecessary and divisive and makes non-religious and non-Christians, because inevitably most of the prayers end up being Christian-based and invoking Christ, those members feel excluded from these meetings. We even pointed out that Jesus was against public prayer.
In the Sermon on the Mount.
Correct.
Why doesn't anybody pay attention to that?
I don't know. they We also sent out an action alert to our Roswell members, as well as people in the surrounding area. Roswell is only about 20 miles outside of Atlanta. It's in the metro area.
This is Roswell, Georgia.
Right.
Not Arizona.
Right. And we asked our members in the area to speak out against the proposal, and they did. And in fact, last week, the council voted to reject the proposal and decided to keep prayer out of the council meetings.
And this is a very great victory. I mean, it's to stop the violation before it starts.
Yes, this is a great violation. And it's also a violation that occurred in the 11th Circuit, which you may know has had some pretty bad case law on government prayer.
And
the
11th
past.
Circuit is in Georgia. So to have a victory where we have a bad precedent is a very nice victory.
Right, right. And one of the good things about this was that council members during the meeting last week were saying that they've been receiving a lot of responses from the community, and community members coming up to them in grocery stores and on the street saying, don't pray, it's unnecessary. And one of the council members, when he expressed his reservations about the proposal, he said that, you know, even though he supports prayer, what concerns him is having belief-based prayer at a council meeting where people have convened for
secular,
business, yeah. secular reasons, which is one of the reasonings that we had put in our letter.
So they listened.
They did.
Isn't that a very nice change of pace?
It is. It's very refreshing.
So congratulations.
Thank
and I think that some listeners might not realize how difficult it is to combat
yes.
these violations once they start. So
yes.
very rewarding feeling, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Now, this is just one of many, many complaints that you've been dealing with for the foundation on behalf of government prayer. And how many complaints have you taken this year? You've written?
This year we've had about 12.
Already?
Already, yes. Yeah. And we have some more that are still in the queue. So, And they're all over the country, from Indiana to California, Illinois, Pennsylvania, Texas.
Yeah, and just this morning, one of our part-timers, Mel, was transcribing away.
Right.
The young women who started to work for us, the college students and stuff, didn't know that was going to be part of their job description, but it's been a lot of transcription going on of prayer.
Right.
Who would think in an atheist agnostic group? And so, well, tell us about the other recent case on government prayer that you just brought.
Well, the other one was in Detroit, Michigan. One of our members at the convention in Seattle in 2009 told me that there were prayers going on at the Detroit City Council meeting, and that the majority of these prayers were Christian-based. And it takes a while to do some of these complaints because we'd like to grab the transcriptions of the prayers and ensure that they are invoking specific deities. And
see what they're saying, that
right,
it's offensive
exactly.
violating the law.
Right. We want to make sure that they are outside of the parameters of the Supreme Court decision. And when we did that, when we reviewed most of the prayers, we found that almost all of them were to Jesus.
Were they led by clergy?
Yes. Yes, they were. And in fact, one of the pastors got up before he gave the prayer and said, "The Lord be with you." And all in attendance said, "And also with you."
Oh my, like a church.
Exactly. It sounded a lot more like a church service than a city council meeting.
Wow.
So we sent a letter objecting to the practice of prayer at a government meeting, but also specifically referencing Christianity and invoking Christ. And the next day, the city council president issued a statement which said that while they wanted to continue the practice of prayer, they were going to remind the invited prayer givers that it had to be non-sectarian and non-denominational.
The next day?
The next day.
Pretty fast.
Yes.
Now, did they already have a written policy that they were violating?
They did not. So, we were unaware of any written policy that they were violating. So,
and that was, when did that happen?
That was at the end of February. We sent the letter on February 23rd, and the statement was issued on the 24th.
So have you listened to any of the prayers since then?
We have not, but our local complainant has been monitoring.
Monitoring it. So, well, at least that's better than nothing. It's a kind of a hard violation to deal with, because we do have a Supreme Court decision that says you can pray under certain circumstances so long as it's not denominational. So
correct.
That's what we really have to push. But all right. And then moving along, of course, the foundation helps many, many students and parents fight religious violations in our public schools. And that is probably the second most common complaint that you're getting, isn't it?
I would say it's the most common complaint. And then second is prayer at government meetings. It's usually seasonal. Usually we get more school complaints in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And then the government prayer complaints seem to come in the spring and the summer for some reason.
And of course, we do regard requests for help from people regarding school violations to be a priority.
Yes,
because
exactly.
You're dealing with a captive audience and young people, and that's really coercive. So one of your more interesting recent school complaints, I think you've dubbed Jar Wars.
Right. Well, that involved a school in Indiana. It was Sand Creek Intermediate School, which decided to have a fundraiser, which they dubbed Jar Wars. And basically what that means is that they'd have a competition between the fifth and the sixth grade classes where each classroom would have a jar, and the students would be able to come in and put their pennies into the jar, and their money would go to a specific purpose.
Like a charity?
A charity.
Which sounds nice.
Right, right. And then in order to win, you'd have to have the most pennies. But what you could do is go into other classrooms and deposit nickels and dimes and dollar bills, and that silver money and the dollar bills would be subtracted from your penny count. so it raised a lot of money because it was the entire fifth grade classes and the entire sixth grade classes. And the original proposal was to raise money for the Nicaragua Resource Network. The school district sent a letter home to the parents of the fifth and sixth graders and said, you know, we're going to raise money for NRN, it's abbreviated, which is a nonprofit organization, and they said that is trying to improve education in Nicaragua. However, the parent who contacted our organization told us it's actually not true. It's actually a Christian mission. And when you go to their website, you can see that their mission is to fulfill or obey Jesus' command to love God and to love your neighbor as yourself by giving your time, talents, and resources to address the spiritual, physical, and educational needs of impoverished children.
And spiritual is notably first.
Right, right.
So what did you do?
We immediately sent a letter objecting to the fundraiser, pointing out that public schools should not be raising money for religious organizations with religious purposes, and asking that students not be encouraged to raise money for religious organizations with which they may disagree. And we encouraged them instead to raise money for a secular organization and suggested perhaps they could donate the money to Doctors Without Borders, who are doing relief efforts
right.
in Haiti.
Entirely secular.
Right. And we got an immediate response on that as well. The school reversed its decision to fund NRN and instead sent a district-wide email to the students and the parents saying that they would instead raise money for Hope for Haiti, which is part of the American Red Cross.
Yay. So, well done.
Yes.
Very satisfying, isn't it?
It is. And they also had sent an email to all staff saying that staff and students will continue to support humanitarian efforts locally, statewide, nationally, and internationally through not-for-profit, non-sectarian organizations. So we have a commitment from them that, you know, they are not going to be raising money for
they
religious
understand.
Groups.
And people who want to give to religious charities, fine, but that should be private
right.
at churches and so on.
Correct.
So I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor talking with FFRF's staff attorney, Rebecca Markert, about many FFRF legal complaints and some very nice victories. We're going to be back in a minute. We're talking with First Amendment hero Michael Newdow about the latest decision in his quest to remove "under God" from the Pledge of Allegiance. And we'll continue talking after this break with Rebecca about timely FFRF complaints. And what did you want to talk about in the second segment?
Well, I'd like to talk about church politicking since the 2010 elections are right around the corner.
So stay tuned to Free Thought Radio.
Hi, my name's Sue Mercer from La Crosse, Wisconsin, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Rebecca Markert. Michael Newdow will be coming up on the second half of our program to talk about why Under God doesn't belong in the Pledge of Allegiance and the latest decision in his case by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Rebecca, who's the staff attorney for the Freedom From Religion Foundation, is kindly subbing for my co-host, Dan Barker. We've been talking about Rebecca's latest victories for the foundation and her most intriguing state church complaints. And Rebecca, you had suggested that we talk some about church politicking.
Yes, the 2010 election season is right around the corner, but there's also spring elections in a lot of local municipalities. And so we wanted to talk a little bit about a complaint that we recently sent out in Arizona. We had received a complaint from a member that a church in Flagstaff, Arizona, endorsed a mayoral candidate. And this is a type of campaign participation and intervention by a church that is illegal and could put the church at risk for losing its tax-exempt status. We received the complaint, which showed that the Lamb of God Bible Church in Flagstaff invited mayoral candidate Joe Howie to Sunday services in January. During the services, the senior pastor gave his endorsement of the candidate and then allowed the candidate to speak to his congregation about his campaign. They even posted pictures on their website about the day, which showed campaign signs at the altar.
And smoking gun.
Right. After we received this complaint, we immediately filed a complaint with the IRS citing violations of regulations that strictly prohibit churches and church leaders from endorsing candidates for public office, especially from the pulpit.
Because they're tax exempt. And so that means all of us are subsidizing.
Right.
This campaign speech.
Right. And now that complaint is currently being investigated by the IRS.
Well, that's a big one.
Yes.
So you have suggested that people who want to know more about the ins and outs of what's legal and what's illegal for churches and lobbying and stuff can go to our website.
Right. With the 2010 elections coming up, there are bound to be more violations like this around the country. And we have a detailed summary of the relevant case law and what to look for about what's permissible and what's not by churches.
So if you
on
go
our website.
To FFRF.org and go to the legal link, then what do they look for, Rebecca?
They want to look for the state church FAQ, and it'll be churches and political lobbying.
And I think that's the second item, so you can't miss it. And there's a lot of info there. And what does it help people with?
It helps people know what the IRS prohibitions against church political campaign activity is. And then it goes into the much more gray area of church lobbying and what the IRS permits churches to do with ballot initiatives and referenda, and which church and when church lobbying crosses the line into political campaign intervention.
And then you also have information about how people can actually complain directly to the IRS.
Right.
People can be watchdogs. And I think we have time to talk about an amicus brief that FFRF has just joined in a case heading to the Supreme Court. And what's that all about?
That is the Christian Legal Society versus Martinez case. We've joined the American Humanist Association in submitting an amicus brief to the Supreme Court, which should be hearing this case in April. In this case, the issue is whether the Christian Legal Society, which is a student organization on a campus
of Hastings Law School,
needs to be a registered student organization officially by the school. They had applied for official recognition, which would allow them to get student funding and use college facilities. And the college rejected their application, citing their non-discrimination policy.
Because the law group or the student group said it would discriminate.
Right. They discriminate against gays and lesbians and also non-Christians.
They can't join the group.
Right. They require that their student members sign a statement of belief.
Wow.
And the Hastings College of Law has an open membership rule, and you can't discriminate to anyone. And so the Christian Legal Society actually sued, and the district court and the Ninth Circuit upheld the decision by the law school, and now it's going before the Supreme Court.
So I think that's going to be a tricky one, but a very important one, because there are a lot of bad decisions that start at the college level and percolate down to the lower grades. I'm Annie Laura Gaylor. I've been talking with Rebecca Markert, our staff attorney, who's kindly joined us here and is very diligent. And then we're going to be talking with the man behind the campaign to restore the Pledge of Allegiance to its original secular content, and that would be Michael Newdow. And he just lost a case before the Ninth Circuit, but boy, did he get a good dissent from one of the judges. And we'll be right back after the break to learn more about this case with Michael Newdow.
Hi, my name is Ted Shellhammer from Wakanda, Illinois, and I'm on Free Thought Radio. Thank you.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laura Gaylor. I'm delighted to be here in the studio with the Freedom From Religion Foundation's staff attorney, Rebecca Margaret. Say hello again, Rebecca.
Hello.
Subbing for Dan Barker. And I'm also delighted that we have on the phone with us today Michael Newdow. And Mike, of course, has been taking challenges of the Under God edition in the Pledge of Allegiance. And I like to say that Mike reminds me of that children's rhyme because he's doctor, lawyer, but not Indian chief, but he's also a talented songwriter. He's an emergency room physician who also has a law degree. He's been donating his time and resources for many years now to challenge religious incursions in our secular government, and he's leading the campaign to restore the Pledge of Allegiance to its original secular wording. And we've asked Mike to come back on Free Thought Radio today to talk about the latest development in that legal campaign. There was a 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals decision March 11th. And so we have Mike on the phone with us from Sacramento. And thank you so much for rearranging your schedule to be with us today, Mike.
Well, thank you for having me.
And you've had quite an odyssey. And maybe before we talk about the Ninth Circuit case, we should say, remind people about your great victory in 2002.
Well, there was a temporary victory in 2002. When the Ninth Circuit, with a different panel, although one judge, the same Judge Reinhardt, ruled in my favor 2-1 that the pledge was unconstitutional. It was a beautiful opinion written by Judge Goodwin, legally impeccable as far as I could tell. As a matter of fact, ever since that opinion, I've never seen anyone, although it was criticized roundly, I've never seen a single legal argument against what it said. In any event, I won. The other side appealed to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said I didn't have standing for reasons we need not get into. And so I immediately brought the case again with other people. And it took a while, but we finally got a decision on March 11th, as you said.
Yeah, and then, before we talk about that, I think Rebecca had a question.
Well, before we get into the details of the recent decision, especially the wonderful dissent by Judge Stephen Reinhardt, could you first tell us what the suit is about and who you're suing on behalf of?
Sure. The lawsuit is about the words under God and the Pledge of Allegiance. The Pledge of Allegiance was first put together in 1892. It was a private thing by a newspaper in Massachusetts, which I think was in the business also of selling flags. And they got the Pledge of Allegiance. They got Rutherford B. Hayes, I believe, to give his imprimatur behind this idea. It was the 400th anniversary of the 400th, yeah, anniversary of the quote discovery of America by Columbus, and so he had a pledge, and the pledge had no religion in it. It was I pledge allegiance, basically, as we have the pledge right now, but without the under God language. There were a couple little changes, but basically it was the same as it was.
Excuse me for interrupting. Speak up just a wee bit.
Sure. And then in 1954, Congress, in the middle of the McCarthy era, and with our hatred of those atheistic commies, decided that we would show how we are different from the Soviet Union, and they added the two words under God. And so it's now, I pledge allegiance, one nation under God, indivisible, as opposed to one nation indivisible. So they actually divided us on the basis of religious belief, showing utter disregard for people who believe that God is not real. And they said they were doing it to distinguish us from the Soviets, which is a fine thing. The Soviets were repressive and totalitarian, and we believe in freedom. But they did it in the wrong way. What they should have said is one nation that believes in freedom as opposed to a nation that decides for its people what religious beliefs to hold, as the Catholics did when the Inquisition was going on, or as the Taliban does today. Excuse me. And instead, they put together this. What they did was, in fact, act kind of like the Soviets by saying that we in America adhere to one particular religious belief, which is exactly what we should have been complaining about in terms of what the Soviet Union was doing. So in 1954, they altered the Pledge of Allegiance.
So you were taking the case again, starting from scratch, and because you'd been thrown out on a technicality, who are you representing now?
So this time I represented myself again. I actually went back because I pay taxes, which I didn't allege in the first case. I was deemed not to have standing. I didn't appeal that. And I also represented three family units, parents and children, one of which dropped out, I think, because of the threat of harassment, one of which was ruled to not have standing because at the time we got to the district court, she was no longer saying the Pledge of Allegiance because she was in middle school, and in Elk Grove, where she lived, the middle schools weren't saying the pledge, although she's now saying it again in high school, I believe. And that was foolish on my part. I should have actually fought that stronger. I didn't. And anyhow, I was left with one parent and one child.
And how old is that child?
That child is, at this time, probably
eight. Yeah. So the child was five when the lawsuit was filed.
So, yeah.
And I thought that we haven't said what happened with the Ninth Circuit, have we? I mean, that it ruled against you this time.
So this time, right, it was interesting because the first time, from the time of oral argument, for those who don't know, basically you have a case, and the first step is you go to what's called the district court, the lower court in the federal system. The loser will then appeal to the Court of Appeals, and you have an absolute right to have the Court of Appeals here and make sure that the district court didn't screw up. The district court is just one judge. The Court of Appeals, you get three judges. It's called the three-judge panel. And you brief the case, you write your arguments, and then you have what's called oral argument, where you go to the court, and then the court comes out with an opinion. And the first time, the court came out with an opinion 3 months after the oral argument. This time, it was 27 months.
Yeah.
It was extraordinarily long.
Oh, I kept asking you, when are they going to rule?
Possibly because of, as I'm sure we're going to get to, the dissent by Judge Reinhart, who was the judge who also ruled in my favor. He was one of the three judges in the first panel and was one of the three judges in the second panel. And I've always said that if there is a God, this proves he doesn't want his name in the Pledge of Allegiance because he wouldn't have given us Reinhardt twice.
And you feel that because Reinhardt did this, well, it was a 132-page dissent, right?
136, I think.
I'm not very good at math.
So,
136 page dissent. Do you think that the delay was partly because he was being so thorough?
I think so. I think, you know, once he realized that the swing vote, which was, there were three judges. He was one, Judge Carlos Bea, who I think everybody expected would rule against us. And then the swing vote was Judge Dorothy Nelson, who was a Baha'i, from what I understand. And so I was somewhat hopeful that, mm-hmm. you know, she would understand what it's like to be a minority, in especially in terms of religion, and would be sympathetic to our argument. I don't know why she wasn't, but she wasn't.
Well,
so
was it when I read that? I just actually read the decision late last night, and I felt like it was written by the religious right. I mean, it was so appalling. Was that your reaction?
Yeah, it was obviously written by somebody who was intent on not ruling in our favor. I love the way that, for instance, Plaintiff Jan Rowe is a self-proclaimed atheist. I love when they always do self-proclaimed. No one's a self-proclaimed Catholic or Protestant or Christian or Jew or anything else, but you're an atheist, you're self-proclaimed. That's always a hint right at the beginning that this person is viewing things.
What was so offensive to me was this idea that this little five-year-old had a heckler's veto. Did you catch that?
Right. That was Chief Justice Rehnquist in the Pledge case. The Pledge case that went to the Supreme Court, the one from 2002, went to the Supreme Court in 2004, and three of the justices did not agree that I didn't have standing. So it was actually a 5-3 opinion against me on the standing issue. And those three justices wrote concurrences which said that the pledge was okay in their opinion. And one of those was Chief Justice Rehnquist, who made that argument that, you know, you don't get a heckler's veto. But as far as I'm concerned, that is, you know, completely showing a complete misunderstanding or lack of understanding of our Bill of Rights. A Bill of Rights is a heckler's veto. It doesn't matter how many people want to have separate but equal water fountains. You have a heckler's veto to keep that from happening. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's the whole point of fundamental constitutional rights.
Well, so let's turn to, I think, what must be your consolation, this really marvelous, passionate, thorough dissent by Judge Stephen Reinhardt. Where I felt like he addressed a great deal of this, including I think he was terribly offended also by the picture that was created of this little five-year-old being a heckler. And he really took her side and he described what it was like for her when she entered kindergarten and was subjected to this religious test where
yes.
she had to be silenced. She had to go into the class, out of the classroom, into the hallway sometimes. I thought it was rather poignant how he took her side.
Yeah, I think that's excuse me. That's Judge Reinhardt in general. I think he understands what this nation's about and how we protect individuals under the Bill of Rights, and I think he does that pretty uniformly. He has done so throughout his career. I will just say that I don't think I've ever said the child is a female. I'll say that. I'll use that assumption now as he did, but some of what he said was what he imagined, because we've kept the individual confidential. So I think he just took that and assumed it.
Took it. Well, it's okay to assume the gender's female since it's always been the other way around for so many years. And now, is there anything in particular that you wanted to address? I mean, I know it's a huge decision, but was there anything that angered you the most, or that you felt was the worst reasoning of Judge Bea?
You know, it's just that if you take the majority's opinion and you logically extend it, you know, there were a couple issues. One is that the pledge is patriotic. When the case went to the Supreme Court, Justice Stevens, who wrote the majority opinion, saying I don't have standing, said, you know, the pledge is a patriotic exercise. Yes, of course, the pledge, you know, pledging allegiance to the flag of a country is a patriotic exercise. But that doesn't mean it can be done in an unconstitutional manner. And so the Judge Bea and many people have done this, keep saying, well, it's a patriotic exercise, as if no matter what you do with it, it's fine. So according to the logic of this reasoning, because he says you have to take the pledge as a whole, and as a whole it's patriotic, you can stick anything in there. So we could have one nation under Jesus, one nation under Buddha. We could have one nation under our white heritage. We could have one nation under our male superiority. You can have anything in there,
right,
according
and,
to the
law. Reinhardt made that point in his dissent, too.
Right.
So, well, I thought it was demeaning. It was a demeaning decision. Demeaning to atheists.
Oh, obviously. Yeah, I mean, just the... But that's what under God and the pledges as well.
Right. And Rehnquist, I mean, Reinhardt, excuse me, sure gets it.
Had it from the beginning.
I think that we should lighten this conversation up by treating our listeners to a little bit of, was this the first song you wrote on a state church topic?
I think it was.
Blues? What's the title of it again?
Sorry, say again?
What's your title of that song again?
I call it Old Religion Blues. Other people have called it the Pledge of Allegiance Blues.
The Pledge of Allegiance Blues. So, Brian, our engineer, are you ready? Got that queued up? Okay.
It all began one Sunday in 1954. That old Pledge of Allegiance, it needed something more. It seemed to be working for 60-something years. The nation had McCarthy, the nation had great fears. The politicians sensed it. Hey, how could they refuse? They had those Pledge of Allegiance needs, some old religion blues. The world was full of danger, got worse with every hour. The people put the call in to Dwight D. Eisenhower. He had to save the children, the daddies and the mommies. They all needed protection from the scheming evil commies. At least that's what they fed us. It couldn't be a ruse. They had those Pledge of Allegiance, need some old religion blues.
And I got some Pledge of Allegiance blues after that decision. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with my substitute co-host Rebecca Markert, and we'll be right back to conclude our conversation with the ever-provocative Michael Newdown. We're going to talk a little bit more about all that history showing the religious intent of tampering with the Pledge of Allegiance. We'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Tim Bailey with the Humanists of Colorado from Denver, Colorado, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Rebecca Markert for Free Thought Radio, and we've got Michael Newdown on the phone with us.
We're talking about what's wrong with the recent decision by the Ninth Circuit upholding the words under God in the Pledge of Allegiance in a case brought by our guest, Michael Newdown.
So, Mike, let's talk about all of that evidence that you amassed and the evidence that, I mean, pages and pages of this 136-page dissent by Judge Reinhardt of the Ninth Circuit about the truly monumental evidence that there was a religious purpose behind inserting under God in the Pledge of Allegiance in this act of Congress in 1954. Give us some examples.
Well, I mean, in the very report that accompanied the bill that went to President Eisenhower, in which they were making the change and adding under God, they said, the inclusion of God in our pledge would further acknowledge the dependence of our people and our government upon the moral directions of the Creator, not even a Creator, the Creator. And we know which Creator that was. It's the Christian Creator, because during the ceremony when they put the flag up the flagpole, they played Onward, Christian Soldiers, that very patriotic tune.
Not too subtle.
Yeah. And then and President Eisenhower, as he signed the bill into law, said, from this day forward, the millions of our school children will daily proclaim in every city and town, every village and rural schoolhouse, the dedication of our nation and our people to the Almighty. It seems that proclaiming dedication to the Almighty and acknowledging dependence upon the Creator, they sound to me like religious acts.
And then Judge Reinhardt, in his dissent in this decision last week, he said that every single comment, every single floor comment in Congress was had a religious purpose noted.
Yeah, I actually went through the entire congressional record for 1954, and I took out all the quotations in regard to this, and there's, you know, tons of them, and they all are talking about, you know, belief in God and how we believe in God. You know, President Eisenhower also said, you know, the first, the most basic expression of Americanism is belief in a supreme being. I mean, you know, it's just, and then I even have a graph, too, of references to religion and God throughout the congressional record for the 10-year period of the 1950s. And it's like it's you know, the curve just goes, it's almost exponential as it rises right around 1954. All of a sudden, you see this ton of religious speech and documents they stick in the congressional record about Jesus. And I mean, it's extraordinary. And for the judges to say, no, this is just patriotic and it was done for patriotic purposes is just so false.
Well, that would be my question. How did the majority deal with all of that religious legislative history?
Plus, the pledge is patriotic. It's the most ridiculous thing. And you have to take it as a whole. So that ends the...
They were citing the Lynch versus Donnelly decision, the
right.
Crèche decisions that say, oh, if you have other things that aren't religious, then it's okay to have a crèche. So they were comparing the pledge to that. It's just painful.
I mean, that's what they keep doing. We have these decisions. We have that one in Marsh, with Marsh v. Chambers, where the Supreme Court said it was okay to have legislative prayer, where we pay chaplains with tax dollars to start off every session with prayers to God. And so the decisions just kind of build on each other. As a matter of fact, Lynch v. Donnelly, which came out the year, which you just spoke about, came out a year after Marsh. And so Lynch v. Donnelly was part of the justification. It says, well, look, if we have prayer to Congress, of course we can have this. And then people go, well, if we have crèche scenes, of course we can have whatever. And then, you know, they just keep circling around.
But I was really pleased to see the Jaffrey decision was kind of heralded by Judge Reinhardt, you know, the Mobile Moment of Prayer, I mean, Moment of Silence meditation case.
Jaffrey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Mr. Jaffrey, we know him, and he was our first Freethinker of the Year at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, a black father, an attorney whose children in Mobile were horribly persecuted, beaten up on the way home from school because they took this case. So it was kind of nice to see him vindicated. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. And how can supporters reach you? I know you have a website. How can they learn more about the case and read the decision?
They can go to the website, which is restorethepledge.com, or they can email me if they choose at pledgehelp@gmail.com.
And you also have CDs for sale, don't you?
There are some CDs, yes, if people are interested.
You can hear that much more music, really funny songs. And some of them we can't play on the radio, namely the song that you made up of all of the horrible messages left on your machine when you first won this case.
Yeah, actually, that's one of the main disappointments I have. I don't know if I have time, but I'll quickly say. I was hoping I'd win just because I get all these great messages and I can turn them into songs. I plan on making an album just of the comments. But
well, we could give you some of ours.
That'll work.
When we have something going. So I want to thank you very, very much for being such a champion of the Establishment Clause and persevering, Mike. And it was a great dissent. And my thanks to Rebecca Markert for joining me today and to Brian Trevani, who's our engineer producer. Free Thought Radio is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin.
Our announcer is Buzz Kemper. Past shows are archived and available for podcasting at ffrf.org/radio.
And you can ask for more information at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Ask for a sample copy of the March Free Thought today at 1-800-335-4021. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio, Blasphemous Broadcasting. Become part of the nation's largest Free Thought Association in North America and speak up for rationalism. Thank you for listening.
Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.